eyes. My friend, the doubt and the wonder, I can see it in your eyes. Was a time I would mine the secrets of my heart. You would laugh, you would cry, and then I would depart.
Welcome to the Basement Tapes, and I'm excited today because one of my favorite people, you get me excited, Elijah. Just the things that you do, the music that you put out, your passion about things that I might not necessarily agree with, is it gets me excited about doing things myself. So welcome to the Basement Tapes, Mr. Elijah Dorfsmith, and thank you for encouraging me.
Well, thank you so much for having me on again, Mike. Really appreciate this opportunity.
Well, I'm totally in love with this new record, and when it came out, I was like, I got to have you on the show as quickly as possible. The problem is, it was right before the election, and I thought that would not be a good time to call you up and get you distracted.
Yeah, we were working, you know, every weekend, every spare minute, campaigning, canvassing, knocking on doors, and we tend to be very politically active.
You do, and besides the presidential election, your lovely wife, who was singing on that first song with you there, is she involved a little bit more than just politicking at this point?
She is. In fact, as soon as that election was over, we started her election for Coconut County Republican Committee chairwoman. So she's running. There's 80 precinct committeemen, so she's working with those 80 people to try to win the majority of the votes.
That is awesome. And when is the election for that?
That will be on December 15th.
Nice. Now, let me ask you this. The music here is magnificent, and I love this new album. It's, I don't know, it came out, first of all, for me anyway, at the perfect time of the year when it started to get a little bit overcast, and the music fits the weather right now, at least in New Orleans. So that's awesome. It's kind of somber. It's beautiful. How do you balance those two things when your wife is running for office as a Republican, yet some of this music is pretty far out there? There seems to be a disconnect. What do you do when people are like, all right, that's great, we agree with what you stand for here, and then you're like, hey, check this out, and they're like, wait, who are you?
Exactly. Well, we probably shoot ourselves in the foot more than we would like. But you know, a lot of times we're not putting this out there for the establishment, older Republicans to hear. I don't think they would embrace it very well, but we just kind of set it out there, and if they find it, it's like you know, whatever, they do what they do. And we've never let our passion for art or writing or being who we are get in the way of what we want to do. So, and it probably does keep us from being as successful as we could be, but it's no sense changing who you are or what you want to do to get somewhere.
Well, what about the other side of that? What about drawing in other people to maybe give your viewpoint another look or another listen who are doing that because initially they were attracted to the music?
Sure, that's happened as well. And politically, you know, we've been able to connect to a lot of people who found us through our website or our music or things we write on our blogs and stuff like that. So it does work both ways. And it, you know, we lean a bit libertarian. We were big Ron Paul supporters. And so that with that, it brings a younger, more open-minded group of people in who are, you know, willing to basically, I guess, go in the direction that their heart, you know, is going. But they're still passionate about politics because they want the freedom to be able to express themselves the way they want and as well as, you know, listen to the music they want or whatever. And a lot of times it feels like it's being attacked from the right and the left, you know, either through political correctness or, you know, flat out censorship.
So, you know, you're in the Republican Party, your wife is running as a Republican. One thing that bothers me about... and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, so correct me if any of this is, you know, not what you believe or whatever. And I'm sure I'm going to speak to one extreme right now, so I'm sure you're not there. But it seems odd to me that the Republican Party has been kind of hijacked by conservative people who call themselves Christians. But the only real thing that they're adamant about is abortion and homosexuality. And it's kind of a shame on a million different levels. And first one is we're supposed to be dealing with both of these issues and every other thing that we deal with an attitude of love and an attitude of servanthood. And that never seemed to have been what was put out there. And that's the only two things that really seem to be the prominent issues. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's just the way the news media wanted people to see that. But why would you, and I've talked to you before, so I know how you feel about things, not necessarily those two issues in particular, but with the Republican Party being associated with being anti both of those two issues, why would you want to associate yourself with that party?
Yeah, that's a great question. Really, what we've done is look at the platform of the Republican Party, and you look at it, and it goes two ways. And I think also a little bit of what you're talking about is regional, because, you know, those aren't necessarily the two main issues that you see in Arizona. But you look at the Republican platform, and there's the fiscal responsibility, which is appealing, but then they dive into the social issues. And what we've said is the Republican Party is at a crossroads, and if they don't choose wisely, they're going to die out and be gone, you know, probably forever. Or they can choose to embrace the younger people. And the younger people tend to be fiscally conservative and more either socially liberal or socially tolerant. So what you have there is basically the old guard of the Republican Party, and they have been fighting us every step of the way. I mean, everything from the county level all the way up to the national level to push us out. But since they lost so, you know, extreme, I mean, losing House seats, Senate seats, the presidency, some of them are a little more open to hearing what we have to say. And fortunately, you know, Ron Paul's son, has kind of stepped in to fill the void that his father left when he retired from Congress. And Rand has really been focusing and telling the Republican Party, if we're going to succeed, you have to, A, you know, look at decriminalization of marijuana, or at least allow the states to make, you know, those decisions. B, we have to become more anti-war, which, you know, the Republican Party, you look at them, and as they stand now, they're losing voters because they are so pro-war, and it's, you know, they don't even believe in a constitutional declaration of war anymore. And so, thirdly, he's basically saying we need to back way off of the social issues and allow people to live their lives the way they want to live them as long as they're not hurting someone else. And I think that's the message that is really resonating with younger voters, with my wife and I. And, I mean, the cold hard facts are that third parties will not accomplish, they accomplish a lot in getting a message out, but when it comes to winning elections, it's just not going to happen for a long time. So we kind of have to work with what we've got. And so we've chosen for the time being to work inside the Republican Party. But then again, they could succeed in pushing us all out. They've actually threatened personally to strip me of my vote on the meeting on the 15th of December because I was seen at a Libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson, event where I was writing an article. So, yeah, I mean, even being seen at that event, and I showed him the article I wrote, it was neutral, but they're saying that's grounds enough to strip me from my vote because it proves that I'm not Republican enough for them.
Wow.
And what they're really trying to do is just to take away enough votes so they can be sure that their candidates win.
That's
because they're running their slate of officers and just very, very establishment people who are think that they can continue doing the same things that they've done. And rather than take responsibility and say, we need to change what we're doing in our party, we're driving people away, they're pointing fingers and saying, well, it was the Ron Paul people who ruined the election for us. It's like, I thought the Republican Party was supposed to be about personal responsibility. We lost. Plain and simple. Let's, move on and try to figure out what we did wrong.
Well, let's get back to the music here, and then we'll talk about the record on the other side of this song. So I've got a few other songs queued up, Anti-Folk, Golden Fire, and Rocket. What do you want to hear next?
Well, we could go for with Rocket.
Let's do it.
And make you do the time because you want it. You've got it. I've got the key and you'll pay the fine. Let me go to town and make you mine. Tech, I'm not it. You fought it. You sold it. I bought it. You've got a complex and I've got a gun. We should oil it up, have some fun. Oh, let's rock it.
Rock it. Rock it. Rock it.
And that was Rocket by the Radiant Dregs. And we were talking politics before, which and I have to just call you one day and I wanted to jump in a couple times, but I didn't think this would be the appropriate forum for doing that. But I do see a lot of the things that you post on Facebook and stuff. So once again, I may not agree with everything you're saying, but I definitely applaud your enthusiasm and your excitement about what you're doing. So let's talk about this record a little bit. So you hadn't recorded really anything for several years, right?
Yeah, besides a few songs here and there, we did the one song "Savior" that seemed to get a really good response, and that got me excited to start recording again. And I think it had been roughly 6 years since we really put out a complete, full new project. So it's been a busy 6 years, and over those that time, I would be writing down lyric fragments and bits and pieces, always hoping I would somehow find the time to put something together. And finally, everything lined up, and it just worked out. So we were really excited and happy with how things turned out.
So how is this record different from the previous Dregs works?
Well, the number one thing when I set out to write this is to leave some of the experimental side, focus on more of a traditional songwriting. So, verse, chorus, verse, bridge. And so the songs are a little more structured. A lot of our previous stuff was just very random and as experimental as we could possibly come up with. So that's probably the main difference people hear when they listen to it. And the second lane, where our previous albums had a lot of keyboard and things like that, this one is strictly guitar. So that may be something else that people will notice if they're listening through. And let's see, probably the last thing, I was surprised when I finished it, there was no songs about murder. So,
all right.
I guess John Cash is probably a little disappointed in me, but it's for some strange reason, they just didn't show up this time.
But the lyrical content is I don't want to say sad, but there's definitely some I guess sadness to some of these songs.
Yeah, but it is probably melancholy in a sense, and I'm not sure if I necessarily set out to give it that sound, but it just kind of went that way. And there is a lot of songs about loss. One of the reoccurring themes that kept coming up was, broken relationships, and it came up more than I expected. So
that I noticed that in the lyrics as well. It reminded me, the album as a whole, because I listened to it, of course, straight through a few times before I put it on, shuffle or whatever, just to hear how, you set it up in the song order that you designed it to be in.
I would like it to be played in the right order, because it seems like that's the complete way it should sound.
And it does. There's a few albums that I've noticed that are very linear, like In Rainbows, in I can't think of another one, but it reminded me of that in a way, where you kind of had to listen to it like that. But it also reminded me a lot of the Velvet Underground. So I hope you're a Velvet Underground fan.
That's excellent.
Take that however you want to take it. Let's get back to the music now. We've got Anti-Folk and Golden Fire.
Well, I guess we could go with Anti-Folk if you'd like.
Let's do it.
If you must be for something, you must be against. It's so hard to always be walking the fence. And the radio is blaring 1,000 songs. If you get something right, then you don't get it wrong. This is art. This is science. This is a lesson in self-reliance. If you want to play the part, if you want to tap the keys, then you better get used to getting scraped knees.
And it just might hurt, and you might cry a little, but when you're all done, you'll feel like a big girl.
And that was Anti-Folk from the Radiant Dregs. And Elijah and I met. This is the second, right, the second podcast that we've done. And you've got an awesome back catalog of great music. Some songs just get stuck in my head, and Noise is a Hairless Monkey is one of those. So you got a hilarious video for that as well. So you've got all kinds of great stuff that you can go to dwarfsmith.com and download pretty much all of it for free. So I recommend, you know, people going out there and getting a hold of that, because it's all free and it's all really good. And some of it, like he mentioned before, is a little more experimental than this record right here. So let's talk about how we met on a message board for the band Daniel Amos, and you started actually a compilation CD. Called Sediment, and then I put a couple of songs on there, and that is in a lot of ways a forerunner of what I'm doing right here with the Basement Tapes. Daniel Amos, you know, they sing about their faith, that struggle of faith. What is your struggle with and or of faith right now?
Right now, you know, it's applying faith to everyday life is something that is a bit of a struggle, because you know, a lot of times you're looking for something to focus on, and you know, being hit from every direction, and trying to make sure that you keep your faith and keep it, you know, centered is something that I think is a big struggle. I mean, it is a challenge.
And what is right now? What are your beliefs? What has been getting you through your life thus far?
Well, I mean, you know, the basic, you know, Christianity. You got to lean on something, you know. And not to say that doubt doesn't exist, and you know, there's a lot of good reasons to be doubtful, but you know, when it comes down to it, you have faith, and so it's, you know, it gets you through.
And how do you, and I'm a parent as well, and I know you got a wonderful son, how do you with all the things that you're doing and things that you know, you said you already had some pressure from the just the political side of things, you know, and
sure.
Then I'm sure we've both been in church situations where we're trying to grow, we're trying to learn, and we're getting kind of maybe pushed out on that side of things too. You know, just this, the music that you're playing alone, 50 years ago, if you would have been doing this, you would have been burned at the stake at most churches that, you know, I ended up being involved in, and I'm sure you too. So there's a lot of, you know, you're on the outside of things, yet you still remain hopeful, yet you still are
right.
You know, loving your family and doing things in a manner that you think, is a godly, biblical way. How do you pass on true faith to your son, in the midst of you yourself being ostracized from the people who claim they believe and are practicing the same things that you were trying to practice yourself?
Sure. The main thing is honesty. You know, Christianity and society as a whole is all about people pretending to be something they're not. Not Christianity, but the popular side of it, or the appearance of it. And the main thing I would say is to be honest with yourself, with other people, and be who you are, and then, you know, allow your faith to apply to you, rather than, you know, going out there and saying, well, I have to do everything this exact certain way, follow these, you know, rules, follow this, you know, all these little things that get set up that becomes more religion and eventually has no meaning. So I think just a honest, true relationship is what it comes down to. And, you know, being willing to make changes, you know, if something is, you know, not, you know, bringing you up, then definitely make those changes. But ultimately be who you were made to be.
So how do you do that? You know, that's, I understand exactly where you're coming from. It's difficult to do. Sure. We all need encouragement. We're all supposed to be, you know, members of one body, and we all are supposed to encourage people in different ways. You know, hopefully this podcast is encouraging musicians to put out music. Sometimes when you're out there on the edge doing music like this, or your political stances or whatever, how do you find other Christians to encourage you, and where your gifts and talents can be used to encourage others? Because, you know, there's this huge group of people, which I'm assuming we're both involved in. I'm assuming you don't go to First Baptist, you know, church. Right. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. And there's probably a reason why you don't anymore. So with that being said, how do people who are on the outside, who are searching, who are looking, how have you found it? How do you find a way to use your talents and abilities to edify other Christians, and to allow yourself to be edified by other Christians in a way where you actually are growing? Or can you at all? Is it too difficult of a task to do? Because
absolutely. And, you know, one of the interesting things is, you know, being politically active and working with, you know, college students in different groups, you get people of all different backgrounds. And it really does almost seem like church. But, you know, we've got a lot of just great Christian people who've, you know, we meet with on a monthly basis, and, you know, well, the focus is, you know, let's make a change in Flagstaff, let's make things better, you know, through political processes. You know, with a large amount of those people being Christian, it always, you always end up using or looking at it through those eyes as well, and so we're able to encourage each other that way. You know, I mean, outreach and, you know, handing out chalks on the corner, we're not doing anything like that. But I think the best example you can be is just to live your life and show something, show that you have something that maybe other people will, you know, are looking for. And, you know, when it comes up more often than you would think, the discussions, and it, you know, you get the opportunities.
Well, let me take that in a slightly different direction, I guess.
Sure.
One of the problems I have with Christians who are politically active, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot here or whatever, and I'm sure you wrestle with these issues a lot more than I do, is once again they go back to the two main things that they're really concerned about, which is it's abortion and homosexuality. When,
right,
my goodness, we're not worried about helping the widows and the orphans. That's, I
agree 100%. That is one of the things that I cringe at with, you know, when I attend church. It's like they'll go do a political thing and they'll say, we have to use laws and rules and force people to act a certain way. And I mean, obviously, you know, if you go out and actually hurt somebody, there should be a law. I mean, that's why we have laws against murder and things like that. But to, you know, micromanage people's personal lives and what they do, what they want to do, who they want to have a relationship with, it should be not be the place of, well, you know, coming at it from a libertarian perspective, it shouldn't be the place of government to do that. If they want to preach it, that's fine. If they want to, you know, lead by example, that's fine. But forcing people to live a certain way through laws is not going to solve any problems. It's not going to change anybody, you know, deep down.
But I think in the church right now, though, you have, and this is the politically active Christians besides you that I've come in contact with.
Sure.
It gets even a little bit more dangerous because there's this idea of dominionism, the idea that the way we're going to usher in the return of Christ is we're going to make this world perfect. And there's a lot of people that now become very politically active because of that. And it's appalling in some ways when you see, and I've heard it. I've heard it on, I work at a Christian radio station.
Right.
I'm here right now. And it's you know, the outrage from Christians when Rush Limbaugh had Elton John play his wedding. Like, Rush,
right,
Limbaugh, why does that matter? But they've aligned themselves so much with Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
So right. much so that the Billy Graham Crusade, and correct me if I'm wrong on this one, actually took off their website, and I should go look this up, but you know, it was at least before the election, they took Mormonism off the website, Mormonism listed as a cult off of their website.
Right.
Because of the election. Now, if you believed Mormonism was a cult before, we've got horrible heart. It's really redefining biblical Christianity and making it social conservatism. And right. you know, the root of that seems to be this dominionism, this idea that we can usher in the return of Christ by making him feel welcome here on this right. earth. How do you work with people who believe those sorts of things, which I know you don't believe that.
Simply put, we don't. We try, and we try to explain to them our views. But, for example, we had some Ron Paul literature out at an event, and somebody went, and she was brave enough to sign her name, so we knew who it was, one of the very social conservative people. And she just wrote with a permanent marker on all of our literature all the things that she thought was wrong with Ron Paul, and basically, he's not anti-abortion enough. He likes gays. It was just ridiculous nonsense of just pure hate. And I'm like, what? I'm not seeing, you know, your Christian love showing through. But since Cindy's running, they've been sending emails out to the other establishment, you know, and they are all very evangelical Christians, like you say, and saying, well, Cindy Dorsmith is the legalized drugs candidate. We can't vote for her. Like, you know, that's actually an issue that she's even running on. And so they fight us. You can't work with them because they consider us the enemy. You know, as Newt Gingrich said, he said the Ron Paul people are worse than the Obama people. So that shows right there how they feel about us.
Well, I looked it up on ABC News and I was correct. And I had read it before. I just want to make sure they didn't, you know, put it up there.
That's incredible.
The Billy Graham Evangelistic Association removed the word Mormon from its website, where it used to be listed along with Jehovah's Witnesses and Scientology as a cult. So that's no matter what you believe about Mormonism or whatever, what we have here is we have ideals that are now being subjected to politics. And I'll be sure. perfectly honest with you. I haven't voted in forever because the last time that I went to try to vote, I couldn't vote for anybody from the top on down. Because
right. it's like, yeah, why choose the lesser of the evils if you can't find somebody that you can believe in?
Exactly. Exactly. And I, you know, this last election, it's like, you know, I own a business just like you do. I work for myself just like you do. And I'm like, you know, right. what? Would I want to work for either of these two guys, or would I hire either of these two guys? And and I wouldn't.
Right.
So, you know, I almost put up on Facebook, you know, a question to you. Why should I vote this year, just to see what you would say? But for me personally, and I'm just putting this out there as you know, to get you stirred up, I guess. So you'll hopefully give me a better answer than the one that I've already come to. Why would I spend all my time trying to change things when I can use that time to, let's just say, work, and then go to Kiva and help microfund somebody's farm in Uganda? I mean, why spend all this time and energy on getting politically active when there's other things that we could do that I would argue biblically we should be doing over and above politicking?
Sure. And that's another excellent question.
And let me say this by preface that by saying I do have the advantage here. It's 10 o'clock in the morning and it's 8 o'clock where you are. So I'm sorry if this is way too early
to be throwing all these questions out at you. No worries at all. You know, when on a national level, I don't think there's a lot that we can change. I mean, it is so massive and so crazy. But when it comes to the local level, that's when I feel comfortable, you know, knocking on doors, canvassing and campaigning. And, you know, one of the big things that we really took on as a huge issue was they were trying to run through a primary system in Arizona where the top two candidates would move on to a general election regardless of their party. So you have a primary with all the candidates, and a lot of times you will have two Republicans or two Democrats moving to a general election ballot. And so it would have destroyed third parties, it would have taken away voter choice. And so, you know, that encouraged us to get out there and knock on doors. We had a couple friends running for LD6 candidates for state representatives, state senate. So the local races are where we really got passionate and involved. And the main thing that we want is for people to be free to make their choices, to have their volition and come to their own, you know, find their own moral compass, to be allowed to be who they are. I hate the idea of trying to, you know, legislate morality and force people to live a certain way. And I think that a lot of our political activism is kind of just to fly in the face of that and say, we, you know, reject that. We want people to be able to be free to choose how they want to live their lives. And so that's kind of where I think, speaking only for myself, I think that's my main motivation, is we need more freedom. More freedom to, you know, everything from what we want to do with our personal lives to how we spend our money. And
so
you know, you see a lot of things, you know, fighting that on a variety of levels, you know, everything from what you can do with your life to what you can do with your money or what you can't do. And so the freedom issue is key with me.
Excellent. All right. That's you're not trying to make the world perfect so Jesus would come back, right?
No, absolutely not. And see, it's almost the reverse. I mean, I've never bought into any of that Kingdom Now stuff. I remember when it was big, you know, Pat Robertson was pushing in Christian Coalition, and I mean, it was huge when I was a kid, and it always rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you really have to, when people start, you know, using scriptures to defend things, especially people who are really trying to prove a point and have spent years looking at the Bible to justify their point.
Right.
It's hard to dispute it on some level, because if you're just going about, I know, you know, you run a business, you got a family, you're doing things. And then when somebody comes in and kind of just, you know, throws all this stuff at you, it's kind of hard to dispute on some level, because your focus isn't on that. It isn't trying to,
right,
you know, justify that or dispute that. And so all of this stuff, you know, comes into play. But it really is a shame. It's a shame on a million different levels. And I remember I was driving up through the Midwest, and I got into, I think it was Missouri, and all of a sudden, man, it was just signs, billboards of, you know, abortion is murder, and if you, you know, murder your kids, and I mean, tons of them, all the way up and down, you know, the interstate. Not one said, if you had an abortion, God loves you anyway, and we love
right.
you too. If you're having any trouble, please give us a call. It was all focused on.
You never see that side. It's ridiculous, because people get so passionate, and it sadly turns into hate. And where's the love and the grace and the, you know, outreach to people? I mean, people everywhere are hurting, and it seems the church does more to make them hurt more than to reach out and try to help people and offer that grace and forgiveness and just a, you know, an ear to listen.
Yeah, definitely. And I know, you know, there's tons of people who've been hurt by that, and it's hard to recover and you know, sometimes. I guess we're about out of time, and I'm actually at work right now, so I need to get back to my real job.
Okay.
So we're going to wrap it up with one more song. And once again, I already mentioned, go to dorfsmith.com, and you can get all of these albums, listen to them. You know, you've got some fan pages on Facebook. You've also got some political pages on Facebook as well. And being a non-voter, and that's something we can talk about at another time, I do appreciate the things that you put up online, because there's a lot of people that go way off on the other side of things, but you seem to put very balanced things on there, and I do get a good bit of my political information from what you post. So if nobody else is saying, hey man, thanks a lot for that, I am.
Well, thank you, Mike.
So, yeah, of course. And wish the family the best. And we're going to wrap it up with one more song. And do you have any parting thoughts?
No, I just want to thank you once again for this opportunity and for enjoying and listening to the music.
All right. Well, here is Golden Fire from Radiant Dream.
Fire, my desire. She was a lonely midnight crier in the waiting room in the storm, a darling trailing behind the door.
I was listening to a fly on the wall. He told me a secret, but that wasn't all. He showed me her laughter and he showed me her fears. He guessed she'd be lost for a million years.
The failure's a summer mine, the daughter of autumn is ripe. A thought as I ride out of town, giving up means that I'm not going down. Go! Nobody knows.